Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Hours after announcing a landmark agreement to acquire Scripps Networks Interactive, Discovery Communications will debut what may be an early contender for 2018's Limited Series Emmy. The entry in our spotlight this hour is Manhunt Unabomber, coming on the Discovery Channel tomorrow night. Executive producer John Goldwyn and Emmy-winning director Greg Yutanis join me next in an internet radio exclusive. As for Scripps, the DIY network brings forth Rustic Renovation Wednesday about two brothers from Minnesota with a hometown penchant for cabin upgrades. Very unique cabin upgrades. Executive producer Jeff Davis settles in next half hour with DIY Senior Vice President John Feld. Also ahead, more on this merger and our classic trivia question of the week. Hello everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and whenever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you with us on a very special end of July day for the Pro Bowl about Television. It's the first of three episodes we are doing this week, in part to mark the close of 10 years on the air is on our program. And we're delighted to have all of you aboard. And we've got some wonderful guests coming your way. As it turns out, it's involved with the two major companies of the day, Discovery Communications and Scripps Networks Interactive. You'll hear people from both companies involved one way or the other during this hour ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a ring from you. So raise your voice, pick up the phone, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open for business. It's SimonApple04 by name. You can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Rick Rowe, our friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. 87 degrees at the top of the hour in New York. And the folks behind Manhunt Unabomber on Discovery Channel will join us from Los Angeles after these news notes. As we noted at the top of the program, Discovery Communications will bring Scripps Networks Interactive into its organization for $14.6 billion in cash and stock. Discovery, which has explored this merge on and off for most of this decade, received a clean lane to seal the deal when Viacom ended their Scripps acquisition campaign last week. Discovery and Scripps together anticipate making more than 8,000 hours of original fare next year. The deal is expected to receive regulatory approval and close early 2018. Imagine Entertainment's TV unit, which capped off a pickup of $100 million in capital infusion from TV Ventures overseas last week, now has an expanded relationship with CBS. From now until 2021, CBS and Imagine will co-produce and own content for CBS, Showtime, CBS All Access, and non-CBS support outlets. CBS Television Studios also will be involved. More CBS news, Nia Long will join NCIS Los Angeles as a cast regular when season 9 starts October 1st. And Business Insider reports this afternoon that Amazon Studios will launch a home makeover series in September where viewers can get some of the products they see in action. Overhaul is the series, planned to run 6 episodes and showcase makeovers involving a number of YouTube celebrities, including baking master Rosanna Pisano and beauty expert Terry Papillon. And that is news notes for today. And let's not waste any time. Joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer of Manhunt Unabomber, premiering tomorrow night on Discovery Channel. He's been with us before, John Goldwyn. Great to have you back, John.
Thank you.
And joining John and myself, he's also been on this program before, the Emmy-winning director of House, also involved with Banshee and Corey to a Cinemax guest series. He is the director of all the episodes of Manhunt Unabomber, Greg Yutanis. Greg, it's great to have you back as well. Congratulations.
Thanks, Simon. I appreciate you having us back.
Greg, I'll start with you. When you decided to get involved with Manhunt, what was your thinking about how it should be directed?
When I first sat down, my first meeting was with John, and, you know, John from the start said that everybody was going to be aiming high, that, you know, to be prepared to work with stars, and that Discovery was, you know, aiming for the fences with this, and that there would be a big push and behind it and a lot of expectation behind it. So, you know, and in that, I spent time with John and Rich Ross trying to get to know the Discovery audience so I could tailor the approach, you know, to best, you know, message to the Discovery audience. You know, I wanted something that was accessible and inclusive, and we kept coming back to the word watchable as an approach. And that was, you know, that was really the genesis of it. And from there it was, you know, and John's taste and our conversations, you know, kept continuing to shape that at every level, from the first meeting to the script development, all through production and into post.
John, you were on this program nearly a year ago for Discovery Channel's first miniseries, Holly and the Davidsons, last September, was getting very good acclaim. And you mentioned on this program that you were very excited to work with Greg on this series. Give us a sense of how the process turned out to last year to now.
I think Greg summarized it really well. You know, I was really happy when I was told that he was interested in the script that we had from Andrew Sadowski, who created the show, and we met, and he spoke eloquently about it, and I had seen his work, which I admired. From that point forward, it was really about analyzing every decision and making sure that we were, A, remaining faithful to the truth of who Ted Kaczynski was and what Fitzgerald was all about and how those two men, kind of the way in which their psyches intertwined. And it really was, in that regard, always making sure that we were doing what we thought was in the best interest of the show, including casting all the parts as carefully as we could. And we were just lockstep through the whole thing. I guess with this respect to the Discovery audience, you know, the goal was, on the one hand, to give them something that they understood, give them something that was enticing, that they might find on their channel, even though it's not really a scripted channel, but to present it in a way that hopefully they would find elevated through the writing, through the direction, through the design, and most importantly, through the casting. So I think in that regard, and very much with Greg at the helm, we were able to, I think, realize that, and I'm thrilled that you liked what you saw. So that's great.
John, before I get to you and Greg about the casting, there's something very unique about this series that people should know off the bat before they watch tomorrow night, and that is that this program deals with this situation from two perspectives: the search for this Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, and then Kaczynski at trial. And as such, the program goes back and forth between two time periods, which is very, very rare for a miniseries or any series really to do, where you've got to go back and forth between the characters at two certain periods of their lives. And John, I'll start with you and then I'll go for Greg on this. How do you make that work without confusing the audience?
Well, it was Andrew Sadowski's conceit that the only way to tell the story of Ted Kaczynski was to tell the story of James R. Fitzgerald. In other words, it was through the prism of getting to understand who he was that you would understand how influential Ted became in his life. And in order to do that, it required us to go back to the origin of that relationship, and also the origin of Fitz, and then sort of see where it ended up. And by traveling back and forth in time, then ultimately taking us into what is the present time of 1996 in the show, when the trial occurs, you understand the evolution of how Ted impacted Fitz, both in terms of what he wrote, as well as sort of who he was and the power of that incredible intellect. I mean, he had an IQ of 168. Fitz was very susceptible. And we see that. So it really gives you a sense of how the common man, in a way, and a guy who was very much alone in his quest to redirect the investigation by the FBI and use a methodology that had never been tested before, and he wasn't even formally really trained in linguistics. So he was very much on his own, which is very true to what a Discovery show should have in its central character, somebody who is very much outside the perimeter of the society in which they live, and they test the systems of that society, which is exactly what Fitz did in this case. And He ended the longest manhunt in FBI history. It was there had never been up to that point a manhunt as long as the search for the Unabomber. So by telling it in both time periods, we were able to really give you some scope to that relationship and to Fitz in particular. It was designed to kind of make you understand for what he experienced, what he went through.
I was going to say, we didn't, Ted being captured, the Google search away, it's not something that we felt that is any kind of, to tell this just in a linear fashion, I think would be, tremendous disappointment instead of really showing the confidence in telling the how it happened. And much like O.J. Simpson, the end of the trial is just the beginning of the story for him. Just like the arrest of Ted Kaczynski is really the beginning of a whole other story that, nobody knows anything about. And it was important to tell both the capture and hit all the iconic moments that people do happen to know, but then open them up to a whole storyline they never knew existed.
I want to welcome guests 699 and 703 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04. Renee, you have a question or comment for either of our guests this half hour? Put it in the room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. Greg, Rich Ross, when he introduced this series at the Venice Jazz Lincoln Center last week, one thing he pointed out was this is not as much about why Ted Kaczynski did what he did, but it's more about the how. Two hows, really. One is how this forensic scientist broke the story wide open, broke the profile wide open, and also how Ted accomplished what he did as the Unabomber. And since you just made a mention of it, how do you, as a director, showcase how in so many different ways?
Well, the important thing was to make sure that everybody felt along for the ride, which I mentioned earlier. And I think, that was something that was important that didn't try to talk over the audience. I tried to make it where I could understand it, and I usually consider if I can fully get it and grasp it and then be able to visualize it, which is a way that I already think and can speak in, then the audience will as well. That's why we wanted very tangible physical examples all throughout the show, so that we were literally illustrating or using physical examples to illustrate these new ideas to the audience. My hope is that everybody, with regards to the how, can then take those examples and be able to explain them to their friends, and everybody feels a little smarter because they watch the show. The how of it was fascinating. When the first time something is done, in the face of everybody telling you that it's not going to work, it's an exciting story to tell. Rocky, I was always I was introduced to Rocky at a very early age when I was a kid through my dad. And, the story of underdogs, I've always been drawn to. And Fitz is an underdog here, fighting not only the system he works for, but trying to catch the most elusive serial bomber in history.
We're speaking with John Goldwyn, the executive producer and Emmy-winning director, Greg Yatanis, the director of Manhunt Unabomber, Discovery Channel's new limited series that premieres tomorrow night with a two-hour episode at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. The vote for the live from Los Angeles this half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted you're with us on this Monday afternoon, last afternoon of July 2017. You have a question or comment for our guest? Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised at 703, and Rick Webb into the room. First of the three episodes we are doing this week to mark the completion of this program's first decade on the air. Next episode is Wednesday, and joining us on Wednesday will be the people behind maybe one of the most unique shows you will see on television all year. It's called Comrade Detective. It's from Amazon, and it's from A24, the studio behind the Oscar-winning Best Picture of this year, Moonlight, and more recently, The Carmichael Show on NBC. We'll let the executive producers explain it. Their names are Brian Gatewood and Rice Thomas. They're both with us live. That's Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow. We'll be televising. Coming up on Friday, we'll introduce you to GSN's latest game show. It's called Snap Decision, hosted by David Alan Greer. And it'll be simulcast not only on GSN, but on Sinclair-owned television stations throughout the country in August. We've got the executive producer who got her career going by doing a little thing called remote control in the late 1980s for MTV, and one point was the head of programming for Comedy Central. Lauren Corral will be among our guests Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. John, let's talk about the two central people in this program. One is Sam Worthington, who plays the forensic specialist who gets the case cracked, and the other is Paul Bettany, who plays Ted Kaczynski, and they both give really amazing performances.
Okay, what would you like to know?
Well, let's start with how were they cast, and when you casted them, did you look for people who could be believable? Because, again, going back to this double time period situation, you had to look for actors who could really play roles at two distinct time periods.
Yeah, I worried less about that. I think I speak for everybody in the production, worried less about that because there's, you know, the benefit of, you know, wardrobe and makeup and, you know, as a way of creating a sense of differentiation between the two time periods for the actors. I mean, as you know, when we first meet Sam in this show, he has a full-on beard. So there was a way to do that visually. But, of course, the most important thing was performance. And really, it was on the basis of the quality of the work that each actor had done over the body of their careers. For me personally, for Paul in particular, it was about Gangster Number One, which was his first movie, because I knew that he could be disarming and he could be homicidally violent. He conveys intelligence, natural, organic intelligence, which was important. And for Sam, I think the quality that was most evident in his work was this earnestness and this commitment. And that's something which Fitz had, that Fitz was in, you know, he wouldn't be deterred. He was a guy who fastened himself to the task. And that was a quality that in what we saw in Sam's work, we thought he possessed as an actor. And I think at the end of the day, it was about balancing those two actors against each other, because having actors of their stature in your show, you want to see them in scenes together. And we knew that we had scenes with the two of them together, and they each bring a very different color, very different quality to those scenes, which makes the dynamic between them unusual and interesting and I think intensely watchable.
The other dynamic, Greg, particularly with Sam's character, is how he deals with the FBI and the various levels of the FBI, from one of the key commanders played beautifully, I think, by Chris North. We all know, of course, from The Good Wife, and before that, Law and Order, and Law and Criminal Intent, among other great roles. And also his partner, played by Keisha Hees Capital, who we all remember as a child from Whale Rider, one of the few kids to get an Oscar nomination as Best Actress, and boy, has she grown up great.
Yeah. They were both, you know, that partnership was interesting, and just also having someone for Fitz to be able to talk to. You know, the more I always felt like Cabby is us. You know, it's like the person that's new to these ideas. You know, Fitz is like one step ahead initially, and then Cabby as a character really allows us to get caught up. And so by the end of the first night, like, you're really on board and fully understanding what Fitz is up to. And I think Sam really brings that to that performance. You know, that guy was meticulously prepared for every scene that he walked into on the show.
Mm-hmm. And Greg, staying with Paul, going to Paul for a second, you don't see him until the second episode, but you hear him. And when you hear him, he immediately projects right from the opening moment. I'm not giving a spoiler away, but right from the opening moment, you get, as we said before, the sense of intelligence. That, yes, this guy may be a maniac, but he's an intelligent maniac. He knows every step of what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, he's technically in the end of the second episode, but he's at the end of the first night. So we put episodes 1 and 2 together. And also, you know, we weren't in any hurry to show the shark, so to speak. You know, it's very, you know, he is a great character, but it was important that he didn't overwhelm. You know, we need that time in that first night of the show to really be on board. So when Fitz and Ted sit down, you have a clear understanding of both men. Otherwise, I don't think the show would work. And so that was the organic time to introduce Ted, you know, was toward the end of the first night. And you know, the third night, or the second night, rather, the third episode begins, you know, almost right where we left off, with them meeting each other. So it's a, you know, it was a complex role in that regard, because, and Paul's preparation was interesting. You know, he didn't want to know, you know, we created what we called the ninth script for Paul, which was just a script of his scenes, because, you know, Paul as Ted didn't want to know about the investigation because he wouldn't know about the investigation. So he only wanted to know when it affected Ted, or the, and because he wanted that confusion. He didn't want to know everybody's story. So, and you can really see that in the arrest episode, which is the sixth night, the, just watching his reaction, you can't figure out who's who and what's going on and how to assess people. So it was kind of a brilliant piece of preparation that he brought to the table.
Kim 20 just joined our chat room. Simon Apple 04. Thank you for popping along. And if you have a question or comment, put it in the room or give us that call, 646-652-2000. By the way, that number works anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. John, what was the most challenging part of putting this program together? Was it the casting? Was it certain scenes that Andrew had drawn up that would really be like, you got to get this right, and if you don't, then the audience sort of veers off course?
Well, you know, I don't know what the most challenging was, because every challenge that presented itself seemed in the moment insurmountable, and then it always is, you know. I think, you know, part of the challenge of each decision was the challenge that we put before ourselves, which is this the right decision? Are we making the right decision in this moment? How is this decision going to impact the whole show? Because we had the benefit of Greg directing all eight episodes. So we were really able to look at every choice, every decision holistically. I would say probably the thing that took the most time was the casting. And specifically the casting of Fitz and Ted. And then we just simply got very lucky after that. Once Sam and Paul signed on, we were blessed with just these wonderful, wonderful choices of people that seemed interested to do the show, mostly because they knew it was all true and because they liked Andrew Sadowski's scripts of what we knew and they learned were based on true events. So I would say probably the most time-consuming in that respect was probably the casting process before we got going. It certainly wasn't the scripts. I mean, under Greg and Andrew's aegis, the scripts came together very quickly, and they were all wonderful. And then, you know, Greg can speak more specifically to whatever production issues there were, but I would say probably in looking at the sort of the totality of the show, making sure that we cast Ted and Fitz as well as possible was time consuming and presented its challenges, but all the better for it.
By the way, before we take a call, Greg, talk about Andrew. I understand Andrew is a product of the Blacklist, the wonderful website which pairs producers and screenwriters together for both film and television shows.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually through John's office. You want to talk about Danielle, John, just how Andrew came on the project?
Yeah. It was an we were looking for a writer, and a colleague of mine that works at Discovery had recommended Andrew, who had never been produced, and she gave me a script called Holland, Michigan, which is the script that was identified on the Blacklist, and I read it. And I thought it understood suspense and it understood detail, and it was very exciting. And originally he didn't want to do the job. We approached him, and we were very politely, because he's an incredibly polite guy, said, I don't know that this is for me. And then he thought some more about it, and it really became the thing that you identified earlier in this conversation, the idea of going back and forth in time and doing the story of Ted Kaczynski through telling the story of James R. Fitzgerald. That was the thing for him that was the most exciting way to unspool the narrative of the Unabomber. And so he came in to meet with me, and lo and behold, we learned that he had gone to Harvard like Ted at a young age, and that his best friend was at Harvard, was a linguistics expert, that he had read the manifesto, something that to this day I still have not done. And so he was incredibly conversant on the topic, And in that way that, you know, was incredibly spellbinding, was able to offer up a lot of details that I didn't even know at the time. And that's how he got the job. And the great thing about Discovery is that when Discovery says they're going to do something, they mean it. And so I was able to dangle the carrot of this will get done, this will get made, this will get produced, this is going to go on the air, which is not very many people have the benefit of having a network that can make that claim, and I did. And that's how Andrew came into it. And Greg has a reputation for protecting the voice of a talented writer who's never actually done any television. And a very powerful incentive to bring Greg into this is that he would become Andrew's protector and his collaborator. And his, in some respects, his tutor in a funny way. And that's what happened. Is that Greg was really able to educate Andrew about the mechanics of production, because time doesn't wait, and they made an incredibly good partnership, kind of a wonderful partnership, each bringing something very unique from their own perspective and talent to the process, and that's sort of how it happened, and I just stayed clear of it.
And if you get a chance to start Modern Discovery, check out this talent. Andrew is a wonderful talent to watch. He could very well also be an Emmy nominee for best writing for a limited series. We have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, you're on the line with John and Greg. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. First, I wanted to say, Greg, you're one of my favorite television directors, I guess, of all time, because you've done so much recently that's just amazing work. So I want to ask you a tough question. You were the showrunner as well as you directed every episode of this series. So I wanted to ask you, was any of it over daunting for you, or like, why was it also important that you did so much of the work?
It kind of ties into to what John was saying about Andrew, you know, that I'm a product of mentorship and, you know, being able to, you know, come into a role where, you know, I have a role to play with a young writer that's clearly talented, that's clearly going to run his own shows one day. And at the same time, you know, an openness to learning. You know, John comes, you know, this is very much a John Goldman production, and coming into that space with someone that has, you know, tremendous experience, you know, in a variety of mediums, is something that, for me, you know, I'm a sponge of. So, you know, I felt very much, actually, and ironically, that I had, like, a lot of the work taken off of my shoulders for really the first time in my career, because John comes in as a real producer. So I was actually freed up to be more of the director and moving some of the, you know, the day-to-day things down the field. And then, you know, when it got to a higher altitude, John comes in and just helps to bring that wealth of experience to navigate these things like a real producer should be doing, instead of just, you know, putting their name on a project and then taking off. And that's usually been the case in the past. And having that kind of partnership allowed me to focus on the directing. And the reason why I directed them all again is because, you know, there's just so much research and so much to be aware of at all times on this, that it took all that focus. I couldn't imagine as an episodic director coming in and trying to digest all that as well as trying to deliver a good episode. And I had spent 18 months of the project by the time I had started directing.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I'm definitely going to check it out. The reviews are awesome already. And I hope that Ted Kaczynski sees it and likes it as well. So best wishes and future success, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Simon.
You're very welcome, Rick. Take care. Rick Will, our friend from Philadelphia, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Before we wrap, John, I know that Discovery is looking at Manhunt as an ongoing series. Are you going to be staying with the next set of episodes, or are you going to be going in a different direction?
Well, we'll see about that. We're sort of waiting with bated breath to see how this does, and if it does as well as we hope and that we expect. There will be a different – the Manhunt moniker – is the overarching idea of the anthology series, and we have a different case that Andrew and Greg and I have been talking about, and if everything goes in the right direction, then we would get going on that.
And Greg, what about you? What's your next project? Are you, and you and Andrew are going to collaborate on a second project down the road?
You know, right now I'm still delivering the episodes of the show. You know, I'll be in post pretty much until the end of August until we're totally delivered. Because we just wrapped a couple of months ago. So, you know, it's been a long road with Manhunt, and you know, right now the next thing is to take some, you know, mental time off and relax a little bit. But John said if the show does well, that may not be the case. So,
and we certainly will see. Manhunt Unabomber, the new Discovery Channel limited series premieres tomorrow night, 2-hour episode, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the Discovery Channel. Check the locals where Discovery is available in your area on cable and satellite. More details about the program and much, much more about the subject matter involved, too, you can head on to Discovery.com. That's www.discovery.com. Once again, Manhunt Unabomber, tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the Discovery Channel. John Golan, Greg Gattanis, thank you both very much for coming on. Congratulations on the making and finally the premiere of the series. I think it's a winner, and I have a hunch that next late autumn, early fall, you're going to be around Los Angeles for Emmy time. So I have a hunch this series is going to be up for quite a few nominations.
Thank you. Thank you, Simon. Thank you for your support.
You're welcome, John, Greg. All the greatest. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.
John Nolan, executive producer, Greg Thomas, Emmy-winning director of Manhunt Unabomber, coming tomorrow night on Discovery Channel, both joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, our crime and trivia question of the week. But first, we have one of the key senior vice presidents of programming at Scripps Network Interactive, John Felt, and also joining us will be Jeff Davis, the executive producer of the brand-new DIY series, Rustic Renovation. They're both going to be joining us from Knoxville, Tennessee, and Los Angeles as we pause after the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected with the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, with 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Tuesday Night Blend. Check out this unique musical show tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific only on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best VTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back for the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised on this last day of July 2017. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 87 degrees top of the hour. First of three episodes we are doing this week to wrap up our 10th year on the air. We kick off our second decade 1 week from today, by the way, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. And among our guests, the head of FX, John Landgraf, and the new head of Platform One Media, former head of Gaumont Television, chief executive Katie O'Connell Marsh, plus somebody from the New York Television Festival, our first subject, first Monday of August, 10 years ago. It's all coming up a week from today. Speaking of Eastern New Pacific, tell your friends, it's going to be a doozy. 90-minute special right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Now let's turn to a different subject, one that has a makeover thought or two. It's a show called Rustic Renovation, which premieres this coming Wednesday on DIY Network. It's one of the networks from Scripps Networks Interactive, and it's one of the networks that's involved along with its parent company in the transaction earlier today to be acquired by Discovery Communications. Joining us live from Scripps' headquarters in Knoxville, Tennessee, is the Senior Vice President of Visual Programming for DIY, Great American Country, and Home and Garden Television, John Fell. John, a pleasure to have you aboard.
Hey, thanks, Simon, for having me back.
Absolutely. And also joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer of Rustic, Jeff Davis. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great, Simon. Thanks for having me.
A pleasure. Before we get to Rustic, John, any thoughts from you and your colleagues about the deal today? How is everybody reacting to it?
We're all taking in the news, and it's business as usual at Scripps.
I was watching both David Zaslav, the head of Discovery, and Ken Lowe, of course, head of Scripps, on Squawk Alley this morning on CNBC, and they both came from a sense of this is really a great partnership for both of us. We're both interested in networks that reach out to a specific audience, whether David calls them super fans, whether Lowe calls them people who have a rabid taste for food or cooking or renovation or home care or whatever. It just seems that this was a fit that I haven't talked about for a while, but it looks like it's coming together, and when it finally happens early next year, that this is going to provide a lot of benefits for both your companies.
I think Scripps and the employees have done a great job of building six really strong brands with these networks. So we'll continue to do that and continue to bring value and these great shows like Rustic Renovation to the viewers.
All right, Jeff, let's talk about Rustic. How did this program come to be starting Wednesday night?
Well, you know, it was actually one of those pretty organic situations. We did a series for DIY for a long time called Bath Crashers that was based in Minnesota. And Chase and Brock, the two brothers who star in Rustic Renovation, actually were served as some contractors on one of the Bath Crashers episodes. And, you know, we just kind of were interested in them. They didn't have a lot of screen time on that particular episode, but we really all kind of loved them. And it was just kind of a little seed, and we shot some videotape on them and started developing them with DIY. And, you know, to the credit of John and his team over there, they also saw something special in them, and we kind of germinated from there.
What are these brothers like? They seem to be people who are very committed to giving something back to their hometown.
They are. I mean, what you see on the show is, I mean, it's a pretty realistic interpretation of who they are. I mean, they grew up in this small town outside of Minneapolis called Prior Lake, and they still live there today. And, you know, they both live, you know, within a couple miles of each other, and their business is based there as well. So, I mean, it is family, and you know, local pride is really important to them. And you know, they're doing their work in the towns around where they live. So, you know, quality and reputation is really important. And it's a really great community. I mean, it's a fun show to work on.
Before we talk further about it, Kim 20 in our chat room just mentioned something. I want to make sure I get something straight here. Because originally I had the information that it was going to premiere Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. And Kim is telling me in the chat room that there's been a time change. You know, John, can you clear that up for us?
Sure. The show's on Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. And there will be a premiere tomorrow night at 10 p.m. where the brothers are at, I believe, Jeff, that's the episode where they're on Lake Minnetonka.
Correct.
In the middle of a harsh winter. So it makes for an interesting episode. But Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern time.
Okay, we got that straight. And this is one of the great things about this show. We always talk about it to really be as interactive as possible. So, Ken, thank you very much for bringing that up in the chat room. That's what it's all about, folks. Interactivity. That's what this promo about television has been all about for nearly a decade, and we really appreciate that. And by the way, that gives me an opportunity to say that if you have a question or comment for either of us this half hour, don't be silent. Give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is going anywhere to catch you across the country or around the globe if you're on Blog Talk Radio, or do what Kim 20 just did. Get something into the chat room. And thank you, Kim. I got the thanks. Thanks for the acknowledgement. I certainly got that. Ken's quite in our chat room. And so it's guest 703 and Webber, our friend from Philadelphia, who called in during the first half hour. He is with us as well. That chat room you can find at our homepage, Simon04 is the chat room. The homepage is blogtalkradio.com/televised. John, how long had Rustic been in development for? And what made you finally say, yeah, this is something great for us?
Oh, gosh, I think, like with a lot of these shows, it takes really a couple of years from the time that the talent's presented to us. And as Jeff said, you know, this is a common casting thing for all the networks at Scripps, where these people will have appeared in a supporting role or even less sometimes on another show. And we see that they're the real deal and that they resonate with the audience. And we leave it up to companies like Big Table to bring us that talent. And that they said, hey, you may or may not have noticed these characters that showed up on another one of the series. Here's what we think they would be good at, and give it a try. So I'm not sure Jeff can fill in on exactly when we started shooting them, but I've been aware of them and probably saw tape on them at least a year and a half ago for the first time.
Yep, that's correct, John. I mean, it's been a good year and a half, 2 years that they've been in development.
Now, when you decide, okay, here's how many episodes you're going to do for this first time out with these brothers, do you tell the brothers, you know, give us some places to go, give us some ideas for people you want to do a makeover on, give us a sense of, I mean, how much do the brothers give you in terms of source material before you say, okay, we're going to go to this house first or that house first or do this assignment third on your list of, you know, how many episodes you've got, and then we will find a way in each episode to sort of put a different spin visually on what you're doing.
Well, the network
Okay.
Oh, sorry, Jeff. I was going to let you
go ahead.
Get much more specific about this because we take a much bigger picture than network. Once we like someone and we're about to say we'd like to move forward with this, we really would reach out to the production company and Jeff in this case and just say, let us know, you know, where they are in their production of these renovations and their work and how many episodes they can get done. It's all based on how long it takes versus when we want to get them on the air. So I have no doubt they could do 25 of these cabins, but if we order 25 right away, it might be 4 years before we get the show on the air. So, and then we really leave it to Jeff and his team to come back to us with that information. And then, Jeff, you can get more specific about the process.
Well, I was just I think that's correct, and I think the thing that I could sort of add to that is just the cool thing about working with Chase and Brock, and I think a lot of these show, this is kind of network-wide now, is, you know, we're following these guys who have real businesses, and I think in a lot of ways the best, most organic show, you know, as much as we can just sort of drop into what they're doing and follow it, you know, and luckily for us, you know, Chase and Brock have a pretty thriving business. So I would say a good amount of this was just, okay, guys, show us what projects you guys have on the books. And then, you know, we have a really excellent team out in Minnesota, along with myself, making a lot of trips out there and just kind of going and meeting these homeowners and that they're already working with and kind of or planning to work with and kind of seeing if they would be a fit for the show. And then, as John said, just how long each project is, because obviously every project is different and we have air dates to follow. But, yeah, I would say with this show, it came together pretty organically, which is great.
Run the Renovation is the series we're talking about. It's DIY Network's newest original program, and you can find it tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on DIY, one of the Scripps Network's interactive family of lifestyle services. We've got Jeff Davis, the executive producer of the series. We also have John Fells, the senior vice president of programming, not just for DIY, but for Sister Network's Home and Garden Television, one of the most popular cable networks on the air, by the way, on a month-to-month basis, and also Great American Country. And they're both with us live, John from Scripps Network headquarters in Knoxville, Tennessee, Jeff from Los Angeles. This half hour on tomorrow will be televised. Simon Appleband with you live from New York, where it's 87 degrees at the top of the hour in this very metro city. And we invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, your voice, and using this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, and you're welcome to get 777 into the room. So thanks for coming aboard. Put your thoughts in the chat room or give us that call, 646-652-2906. Jeff, how do the brothers define rustic? Because rustic is sort of a term that you can interpret any sort of ways.
That is a tough question, even for a seasoned DIY producer like myself. I think with these guys, as you touched on earlier, I think it is a lot of using local materials and Brock, who is the older brother and who is really, you know, kind of a master woodworker. I think he's just really drawn to reclaim materials and just using stuff that he's finding in local farms, and he likes to go to antique shops. And, you know, I think it's a fine balance. I mean, Chase is a really good visionary, and he's the lead contractor of the two. And, you know, they definitely are working with what the clients want as well. But, yeah, I would just say a really big emphasis on wood that's been harvested locally. I mean, Brock has a pretty encyclopedic knowledge of wood from that area, and he uses a lot of interesting older techniques in his building process as well, which I think the viewers will enjoy, at least I hope.
However, there's a couple of things I understand some of the episodes that the brothers do that are a bit unique in terms of either using recycled products like recycled wood or other material, or they will do something that is semi-modern or semi-unusual in terms of where you place the material or how you do this particular part of the cabin.
Well, you know, I think – you know, one of our episodes that aired recently that I think was kind of a magical transformation is one of their clients had an old Quonset hut, which is one of those, I'm not sure how familiar the audience is, but they're kind of like those World War II era kind of circular structures that, you know, were used as like bunkers and sort of troop housing. And they really took that thing and just transformed it into this rustic modern showpiece. And it's pretty remarkable to see, but they actually incorporated a lot of materials that you would see in an original Quonset hut, kind of like like siding, like aluminum siding, but then mixing it with, you know, rustic wood that they found on the property and in local farms. And you know, Brock made some custom bunk beds out of some wood and some old crates he found in an antique shop that were like 50 or 60 years old. And it just, it really popped. It was really cool to see.
John, where are things at right now with DIY in terms of original plumbing directions? I understand you have a show coming out in September called Vintage Rehab, which deals with homes in the Pittsburgh area, and it also has a flip the house kind of feel to it. What kind of things are you looking at or researching or developing that takes the network into some, let's say, directions or subject matter you haven't approached before?
Well, I think some of these, in addition to us trying to find the experts and the people that are passionate about the renovation work that they do, Vintage Rehab is a great example. Ali Mahon is a woman that was sent to us by a production company that does great work for her clients in Pittsburgh. But similar to Chase and Brock, you know, they're very, very proud of their community, and they want to see that community and the houses in that community improve, you know, project by project. So that resonates a lot with our fans. I also think that DIY has become a network that takes you to some of the coolest, you know, locations around the country. And Maine Cabin Masters, the second season's coming back next quarter with a group of characters up in Maine that renovate, have to, you know, find where they are, these sort of remote cabins that have been left to rot, and renovate them into beautiful first and second homes for people. We also have first-time flippers coming back, which is a real cinema verite sort of look at people that are trying to get into that business that we focus on so much on our networks, you know, for the very first time, and the mistakes that they make, which I think has become such a popular show for our viewers, because you're really seeing, you know, that could be you if you go out there and try to do it for the first time. And I always relate it to not really learn. You can watch all the car shows you want, but you don't really learn much about your car until it breaks down on the side of the road. And that's what First Time Flippers does. It constantly sort of breaks down and teaches you how to do renovation correctly.
John, one of the most popular types of shows that they're hitting the scene the last number of years has been the type of show like Shark Tank, where you have entrepreneurs from different areas of life who pitch products and try to get funding for the product. The latest example of this is Steve Harvey's Thunderdome. And we had very positive executives that program on a few months ago, doing very well for the top new shows this summer in terms of ratings, where the audience decides which of two entrepreneurs gets anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000 in funding to boost their business. Any thoughts about whether that kind of a series might work on either DIY or Home and Garden Television, where you would on a regular basis have entrepreneurs who are interested in new products for the home, new ways to decorate, right, new ways to renovate, that kind of thing to get themselves, or a service like Home Advisor to get that kind of service off the ground?
You know, we actually have tried that, and we even did sort of a Shark Tank for flipping pilot with Vanilla Ice, who's incredibly popular on the network, thinking that that would give us sort of a head start. You know, and we do that from time to time and really try to offer the viewers a variety of certain things. But the message comes back to us over and over again that it's not about the business. It's not about the money and the bargaining and this and that. It literally, the homes are the stars of the show. And our viewers have shown us, at least currently, Simon, you know, we're in a trend where time and time again, the house is the star. You know, we all have issues inside of our home. Just give us compassionate, you know, expert people around the country that are doing it in real life for their own clients, and, you know, show us what we should be doing here and what we should be looking out for and how we can make our homes even more beautiful. So those shows, as you spoke of, we've tried, and they haven't resonated as well as simply getting experts like Brock and Chase and people like that to show you what to do.
I know Food Network also tried a series like that, which ran a season, which had, again, a Shark Tank-type format, people bringing unique food concepts or restaurant concepts to that table and trying
right.
to get funding from that. So that sort of popped up, too. Show we're talking about is Rustic Renovation. It's the newest original series from DIY. Premieres tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. We've got the executive producer, Jeff Davis, joining us live from L.A. And from Swift Networks Interactive's headquarters in Knoxville, Tennessee, the senior vice president reporting for DIY, Home and Garden Television, and Great American Country, John Feld. They're both with us live this half hour for a few more minutes on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy to have you with us on this final day of July 2017. Simon Applebaum live from New York. First of three episodes we are doing this week to mark the end of our first decade. Yes, hard to believe, we started first Monday of August 2007. And next Monday, we kick off our second decade with a 90-minute special. Joining us there will be the head of FX, John Landgraf, whose network just received 50-plus Emmy nominations for programs such as Feud, American Horror Story. Katie O'Connell Marsh, the former head of Gaumont Television, now chief executive of one of the newest radio production companies on the planet, Platform One Media, co-owned by TPG, the investment firm, and Liberty Global, the major international cable operator. And we'll also have somebody from the New York Television Festival, which was the subject of our very first episode back on that first Monday of August, 2007. So join us for our 90-minute special 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, only on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Jack, how long did it take for the brothers to be comfortable with the camera, comfortable with their clients, and everybody sort of was harmonious in terms of not seeing the camera as, oh, something feared of, but just as a natural observer of what they're doing?
That was definitely a progression over the course of the season. I mean, and I'm not sure how noticeable it is when you watch the episodes, but I definitely felt, you know, I would say 3 to 4 episodes in, I really felt like they started to hit their strides, where I thought these guys were really in it. But it was definitely an adjustment period. I mean, when you have a crew of 15 or 20 people in your face constantly when you're normally doing what you normally do, it's an adjustment period. But it was great, and everybody had a good attitude, and you know, it was fun. They're great guys, and we have a really great crew in Minnesota who we couldn't have done it without either. So that helped.
John, before letting you and Jeff go, any thoughts about what's coming up for any of your three networks? What do you see as like new shows that you're very high on for the rest of the summer and for the fall?
Well, we currently have well over 60 pilots in development for the three networks. So we're putting those on strategically here and there to see how our audience reacts to them. We obviously on HGTV feel very strongly about the new season of Fixer Upper that's starting in fourth quarter this year. That's always been one of the top cable shows. So we're looking forward to that coming back, as well as new seasons of Hometown and Good Bones, which are also doing very well for the network. Property Brothers, always a fan favorite, and we'll have a really special spinoff, Property Brothers at Home, where we focus on Drew Scott, one of the Property Brothers, and his fiance as they prepare for their new home together. So we'll see how Jonathan reacts to having a third person in that mix. So we have a lot of great things coming up for HG. And for DIY, Vanilla Ice is back, as well as brand new Tiny House Big Living shows and the other shows that I mentioned. Rehab Addict, of course, which has always been a huge show for us. With Nicole Curtis is coming back in October as well. So we've got a lot of great things on the networks, and we're looking forward to a really strong fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm. But it all kicks off with Rustic Renovation, the newest original series from DIY, premieres tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on that channel. Check a look to where DIY is available in your area, and for that matter, also Home and Garden Television and Great American Country, and the other scripts, services like Food Network, Cooking Channel, et cetera, Travel Channel, available on your cable or satellite system. For more details about this particular program, here's where you go, DIYnetwork.com. It's DIYnetwork.com. Rustic Renovation tomorrow night, 10 p.m. on that channel. John Feld, Senior Vice President of Radio Plumbing at HGTV, DIY, and Great American Country. Jeff Davis, Executive Producer of Rustic. Thank you both very much for joining us. John, congratulations on the new partnership with Discovery announcer today. Hopefully it will be a great one starting early next year. And we thank you both for spending your money with us.
Thanks, Simon. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Simon. It was great.
You're welcome, John. Jeff, take care. Enjoy the rest of the week. All the best.
You too.
You too. Thank you.
John Fell, Jeff Davis, joining us live from Knoxville, Tennessee, and Los Angeles, respectively. And now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. And if you are a person with the correct answer by the end of the week, you can win a wonderful set of magnets from the fine folks at Disney Junior. They're wonderful, great for the family, and put them up anywhere. And here's our question. We're carrying it over from this past week because we had no winners. Let's see if we can get our second winner in the last 3 weeks or so. Here it is. Name the 1960s television comedy series starring Gene Kelly. Name the 1960s comedy series starring Gene Kelly. I'll give you a couple of hints. It's based on an Oscar-winning movie from the 1940s, and it won an Oscar in part for a song in the film. Let's see if you can get it. The 1960s comedy series starring Gene Kelly. It was on ABC, I believe, in 1962-63. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and your full mailing address. And if you just missed the question, I'll post it tomorrow morning on Facebook at my Twitter, hashtag at UBCSimonTWBT. That's at UBCSimonTWBT. If we don't have a winner by Wednesday afternoon, we'll have the question again for you on our episode, which, by the way, we'll have the two producers behind the new Amazon Studio series premiering shortly, Comrade Detective, executive producers Brian Gatewood and Rice Thomas. That's coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And among our guests on Friday's episode will be Lauren Corral, executive producer of the new TSN game show Snap Decision, starring David Alan Greer. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. More than 5,000 replays of our episodes so far this month. You can also check us out in podcast form on iTunes.com. If you have Apple TV, check out the iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple store near you or order it online. We love hearing from you, so send us a note using our email, simonapple04@yahoo.com. You can also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. However you get the communication going, we appreciate it. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams. Andy Toad, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, executive content producer. The co-founders of this very enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Charish. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Audible will transform the way you hear the world. And by the way, let me tell you that coming up from Audible.com is Everything All at Once by Bill Nye the Science Guy. If you want to get that as your free book with a 30-day trial, audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. And Audible.com transformed the way, like I said before, you hear the world. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Monday. We are back up in 48 hours from now, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Wednesday. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. Whatever you're up to, please be safe and be great. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned.